actress Kate Smith.
Hello, everybody. It is my happy privilege to introduce a new song, God Bless America. While the storm clouds gather,
makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom.
That song out of Yip Yip Yap Hank 22 years ago. Sounds better now.
Robert, are you with us? Good evening, everyone. Bear with us a moment. I believe Robert needs to unmute his phone. He'll be with us in just a moment.
Well, I haven't figured out how to do that, so.
I knew you would.
Good evening, everyone. It's March the 1st. Bear with me as I get the technical difficulties figured out.
Robert, would you like us to play another song?
Hear me now?
I can hear you.
All right, so we're going to abandon Skype and retreat to the cell phone.
Okay.
Very good. So good evening. We're at week 34, March the 1st, 2012. We're moving into spring. You know, let's start with we're going to have an encouraging story from the Connecticut Chief Justice, Steve Martin, who will join us and share his story of knowing who he is and how he has kept the actors at bay. We're actually going to follow that with a second story, which is Kelby Smith, and he has a story of an interaction with the police over in California. And we then have Chief Justice Nathan Peachey coming on, and as I spoke with him yesterday on the phone, he's very excited about what he's bringing to us. He says this is the most important work that he has uncovered that he is bringing to the Republic. So I encourage you to have your pencils handy and a pad of paper as we get into this evening. We'll then open it up for questions and answers. I have two thoughts this week as we open up. The first is about justice. I was reviewing some inspirational materials this week, and the preacher was talking about Jehovah Mishpa, which is the God Justice, one of the names of God, and the power of justice. And I want to start by just talking out of an Old Testament book called Isaiah. It's chapter 59, verse 4. And it says this. It says, "No one calls for justice, nor does any plead for truth. They trust in empty words and speak lies. They conceive evil and bring forth iniquity." There's a couple of other scriptures out of the New Testament that he followed it with, and I apologize, I have just way too many things on my desk to pull up the New Testament comments to it. But my sense of it, and what I'm asking you all to think about and pray about this week, is justice. We don't have justice because we don't call for justice. If you're interested in pursuing the teaching on this a little bit, there's a YouTube by Sid Roth and John Paul Jackson. So if you YouTube that and have a listen to that, you'll find the rest of the understanding in that. And he says, we need to call it forth because justice can be withheld for generations. Generations don't receive justice because we don't ask for it. So that's number one. The second thing that's on my heart is there's a couple of key folks here in our republic who are being challenged with health issues, serious health issues. And I would like us to ponder that, ponder the fact that we are called to be salt and light in the earth, that Jesus sent out his apostles to go and lay hands, to heal the sick, raise the dead, cast out demons, and to bring light to the world. We do a lot of it through medicine these days, but I think it's time for the body to wake up to our full calling. So as I lay out those couple of spiritual thoughts here, I want to give one more quote, and I'm going to ask Bruce Dietler if he would open us in a word of prayer. This is from a daily word. It comes from Small Straws in a Soft Wind. "It is important that you keep your wits about you and stay calm in the midst of turmoil. If you will purpose to be at peace, the chaos that threatens to overtake you will be averted. Take each moment as it comes, knowing that I have given you the wisdom and strength to deal successfully with all adversity. Be strong and calm, says the Lord. So, Bruce Dealer, I saw you there on the queue. Let's see.
Good evening, Bruce. I am here.
All right.
And God is on the throne. Praise his name. I want to share also, there's another name for Jehovah, and that is Jehovah Kana, which means jealous Jehovah. He is jealous for his name and for his glory that he chooses to share with no man. And that is a very, very sobering thought. We serve a great and a mighty God. He is a healing God. He's a delivering God. He's one who brings salvation of spirit, soul, and body. And his desire is that all men would come to the saving knowledge of his Son and walk in divine health and divine life. So, Father, we set our hearts in agreement for those who are suffering and those who are afflicted, spirit, soul, or body at this season. Father, we thank you. You are a great and mighty God and able to move and deliver by many or by few. And we set our hearts in agreement for those who are in affliction, Father. We thank you, Father, for those who are standing up, Lord God, to bring deliverance and set at liberty those who are bound in governmental situations and political and legal situations, Father. We thank you for raising up those who desire to bring remedies and resolution, Father God, to the turmoil and the trials of this life. We thank you for the victory that we have in Christ Jesus. It is ours now. It is not something that needs to be brought. It is ours now, and we thank you for it. Father, glorify yourself on this call tonight. Our time of fellowship, may it be sweet, Father God. May the light and the glory of God permeate each and every heart, and have your will in your way in and through your republic, Father, in the name of your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Amen.
Amen. As providence would have it, the other two scriptures I wanted to give you on justice are these. Psalm 89:14. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Mercy and truth go before your face. And finally, when we look at justice in the face of all the foreclosures and all of the stealing of our liberties, we turn to Proverbs 6:30, where it says, people do not despise the thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is starving. Yet, when he is found, he must restore sevenfold. He may have to give up all his substance of his house. All right. So, Steve Martin, we're going to move right into this. We've got some testimonies here this evening, and then an exciting teaching from Nathan. So, Steve Martin from Connecticut, welcome to the roundtable.
Hello there. Am I loud and clear?
You're loud and clear, sir.
All right. Thanks for having me tonight. Let's see. How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
There you go.
10 minutes? Okay.
And we have a shepherd's hook.
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, let's go in. Let's start, let's say, in the beginning. I'm going to give a foundation here, what's going on. I was on the original grand jury. And after the letters to the governors went out, In our town, the local police force was notified, and that was confirmed by our attorney general. He's actually befriended one of the officers on the force, and he approached him. He said, listen, I don't know what's going on, but a letter came down from above, and basically was said that there were names, of course, they were listed, and they basically said not to apprehend or, you know, harass, basically leave alone. So that's basically what the stance is of our local police force with people in the Republic here. So let's see. And then also I had a traffic stop not too long after that where I was using a cell phone. And the officer came to the window, and the first thing I presented to him was a public servant questionnaire. And he goes, basically, what's that? And so it's something you have to fill out. And he says, well, I don't want to do that. And I said, well, you're going to have to. He says, well, you know, I was going to give you a warning. I think I'm going to give you a $100 ticket. I said, listen, let me make a deal with you. I won't push my in if you don't push your in. He said, oh, that's fine. Is there can I just look at your license and registration? Sure. So he takes it, he goes in his car, comes back, you know, after a few minutes, and the first thing out of his mouth, he goes, listen, this government thing, you mean to tell me you can drive around using a cell phone? I said, sure. He said, so do me a favor, next time you see one of us, meaning a police officer, put your phone down so we don't get attached. He said, have a nice day. So as things went on, there were some other situations also. I'm an electrical contractor, and we have a work van. And when we discovered the fraud with the whole banking, we at that point, you know, said, you know, well, you know, we're not gonna pay, you know, the thief anymore. So we stopped paying on that. And they tried to pursue. It's kind of a long story. Tried to get the van. They tried to repo it, and we confronted them. The officers actually worked on our behalf, told the repo guys to get lost, basically. And we still have the van. We haven't paid for it in a long time, and they basically went away. Let's see. As far as the mortgage, I stopped
paying. That's good. You've gotten two for two so far.
Yeah. as far as the mortgage, same thing. When I discovered the fraud, I approached the CFO directly, and he couldn't answer any of my questions. So I knew for myself that I was, you know, paying a thief, and I stopped 27 months ago. For the first year, they didn't pursue anything. Then they said, you know, basically, let's see what he's made of, and they went and pushed the foreclosure through. And it's very apparent when you get into the court. When you have all the evidence that the judge doesn't want to see anything, he's paid off. So last October, there was the law date, which basically you have an opportunity to, you know, make a deal with the bank. Of course, I did not do that. November, they issued an order to eject me. December 12th, Mrs. Marshall showed up, and she left the order on my gate. It was on a Monday, and she said she was coming back Wednesday to eject me. Tuesday, however, the chief of police and the lieutenant were in the diner where my ex-wife works, and she engaged the lieutenant in conversation. She knows him. They started talking about different things. Then foreclosure came up, and the next thing you know, the chief says, are you talking about that Sovereign guy up on 12 Elizabeth Lane? Well, I can tell you right now, that's not happening this week. She hasn't gotten back to me, and I'm going away maybe next week. So the following week, I get a phone call from the lieutenant. He's there, you know, this is Lieutenant so-and-so. I'm looking to see if I can mediate something between you and the marshal. And I basically told them at that point what's gonna happen if they show up on my land. I told them I'm going to demand their oath of office, and I'm not going to give them permission. And he said, listen, we're not getting involved. I'm just calling to see if I can mediate something between you and the marshal. Can I give you her phone number or your phone number? I said, yeah, sure. She calls me an hour later. And hello, Mr. Martin. This is Marshal so-and-so. I'm looking to see what your intentions are. And I told her the same thing. And she was getting frustrated on the phone. She said, I guess I'll see you later, basically at the end of the conversation. And I didn't hear anything from her. It returned back to the court unsatisfied. They reissued another order this January. She shows up a little over 3 weeks ago. Again, puts another order on my gate. Saying it was on a Tuesday. And she was going to be back on a Thursday to eject me and move everything out. Well, she calls me on Wednesday. I said, hello, I'm coming on Thursday, see what your intentions are. I said, it hasn't changed. I guess I'll see you on Thursday. Well, she says, at that point, if you resist, I'll have you arrested. I guess, so I'll see you on Thursday. Come Thursday, I'm actually bringing some of my personal vehicles up to the top of the driveway, locking the gate. We had about 10 people from our state show up, and I live on a private road, and I can't see the beginning of the road from where I'm at. But they're saying there's a whole entourage at the beginning of the road. There were the banker, the attorney, other cops, and there was two marshals, one of which was hired for the day. And as my business partner was pulling in, he knows this guy, and he said, "He said, hey, what are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, they hired me for the day." You know, he's a marshal, and he said, "If I were you," I said, "This is my partner talking to Marshall. I would get out of here. I would turn around and just leave. You don't want to get involved in this." And he said, "What are you talking about? Trust me." Anyway, so anyway, we had everybody there. Next thing you know, the marshals show up at 9. They come in a vehicle. They both get out. The marshal says, "Who's Mr. Martin?" I said, here I am." And then I demanded her oath of office, and she basically just flashed her badge and said, "This is my oath of office." We presented a questionnaire to her, a public servant questionnaire. She basically just gave it back. There was a little bit of chit-chat with other members in the Republic. And then she said, "Are you going to vacate?" "No, we'll be right back." So they pop back in the car. After a few minutes, they come back with about 4 town cops. And they were in no hurry to come and engage us in conversation in the town. Now, you know, like I said before, their stance that they don't want to get involved, but they were being pressured. So I engaged the lead officer, same thing. The man is open with the office. He says, "Okay." And, you know, I must have repeated it like 4 or 5 times. And I told him, "I'm not giving you any permission." And at that point, I said, "Listen, it's a felony if you don't have your oath of office." And then he looks at the marshal. Is there, I guess you'd want to come down and maybe file a complaint. And her face was just a face of confusion and bewilderment. She was just really upset. They walked away, and you could hear in the distance, "What's the chief going to do about this?" But after a few minutes, the whole entourage just slithered away and they just disappeared. And, and we haven't heard anything from them since. Yeah. So, you know, and I just want to say that, you know, God has been definitely a support in my life. And, you know, I realize that I'm a king's kid. And he told me a long time ago, he said, "Listen, if you're my kid, you need to speak and, you know, and act like me." So that's something that he's been doing with me in my life, in this journey. Other people that have really impressed me was President Tim. When I first met him, he was somebody right off the bat that I said, "Well, he definitely knows who he is." And it's just a joy to listen to him. And other people, Fred and Nina. In fact, a year ago, a few of us from Connecticut flew out to Las Vegas with a one-on-one with Fred and Nina. And what I got out of that, you know, he did talk about the EFTs, but the big thing was the oath of office for me, and his confidence and his stories that he presented to us. And there was a lot of success with the oath of office. So, you know, and you got to really get in your head. Of course, I've been, you know, trying to educate myself. But when you have that confidence, the people that you confront, they see that, you know, and it makes a big difference. So that's about it for now. So we've been pretty successful.
Steve, this is Janine. Yeah. If I could, Robert, for just a moment, what I wanted to point out with Steve's story is Steve knows who he is. He never got flustered. He never got confrontational. He always kept it cool. And that's what we all need to strive to do. And thank you. I yield, Robert.
Welcome. Thank you, Janine, and thank you, Steve. It's an inspiration to see you face it and face it calmly and have a support team together and have almost a, well, it sounds like you just had a surrender and a resignation about it, but you knew you know who you are, and you communicated that beautifully. Kudos to you. Thank you very much for sharing it. And these are exactly brothers and sisters that just make us be who we are and see the fruit that's starting to show up on the vine of the Republic. Our second story came impromptu. I got a call just before the call. witnessing to Kelby Smith, who has a story to tell us about what he's been up to in California. And I know I was told it was going to take you 20 minutes, Kelby, but can you do it in 10 and still be just as passionate about it?
I'll have the hook. I have the hook, Kelby.
Well, let me say to that first gentleman, congratulations, number one. Number two, the oath of the office is just the tipping point of holding the accountability. You got to follow it up. Number one, with what Nathan's going to talk about, I believe he's going to say it's imperative that we do the accepting the deed. I totally agree with that. Accept the deed, do the land patent, be the king on the land, basically, or the true sovereign. Number one. Number two, settle the debt, discharge the debt, which is the EFT component that is going hog crazy now across the country. The names that you mentioned before now have confirmed over $100 million of discharged debt. And, you know, my story is one of a very personal nature. I'm going to do my best to tell it without choking up. And I know it's going to sound funny, me saying that, because it was a very personal thing. We just got done with a seminar this weekend. 200 people showed up, and I got to meet a lot of people, one of which was a gentleman that is going to be he's already famous in life. He's all over the internet. His name is Melvin Anthony. He's a bodybuilder. He does competitions. He's huge, big guy. I got to have lunch with him on Monday, joined me and my mom and one of his friends, and we talked, and we were talking about our childhoods and growing up, and, you know, I was kind of a street fighter when I was a kid. I didn't like bullies, and I'd take out any bully that was picking on somebody or me or whatever. And he was the same way, and he came from the hood, and he grew up and was a part of one of the gnarliest street gangs in L.A., and well, it turns out he decides to go to what was called the Training the Trainers meeting on Tuesday, and about 70 people showed up. And what we're teaching people is the fundamental principle of servanthood and leadership. And to be a trainer of the Constitution, to be a trainer of the Bill of Rights, to be a trainer of these different things that are being taught across the country right now, and to show people the heart of a leader comes from a heart of being a servant. And as I'm talking in front of about 70 people, I get into what was important to me, which was forgiveness. Now, this is a tough story for me to tell because it was a major part of my life, and I'm going to be careful with what I say because I don't want to break down. I mean, I'm serious. It's that tough for me to tell because I was about 21 years old, and it was the night of the Rodney King riots. And it was a catalyst in my life, and it's going to be important for everybody because we all have a catalyst, and this is the one that launched me into really seeking truth and finding out who I was and what my options were and what I needed to do in order to be a person that could defend himself in court. Well, I was I went out on a very bad night. I shouldn't have gone out on this night. It was the night of the Rodney King riots, and I was at the Fullerton Red Onion. And I prefaced the story in front of these 70 people. I prefaced it with, this is a true story. And because it sounds so unrealistic, but what you're about to hear is going to be jaw-dropping because it not only became realistic, but it was a forever day in my life I will never forget. As I'm telling the story, mind you, I'm about 21 years old. I'm out. I'm in a bar, and it was the night of the Rodney King riots. And I'm looking around the room, and the reason why I'm telling the story is because it was about forgiveness. And here's why. I'm looking over at the bar, and there's this black guy. He's getting drunk, and I'm listening to him talk with these other white guys. And these white guys were smack-talking this guy. And so I knew who this black guy was with, so I went up to his friends and I said, look, guys, this guy over here at the bar is about to get pounded, because I knew these guys, and I knew when they talked smack that they were going to take care of business. Well, if I'd have known who this guy was, I probably would have thought different after the fact. But here's the point. as I'm talking to these other guys, trying to explain that his friend's about ready to get beat, I didn't know they were a fraternity of 90 guys at that bar that night having a party. So next thing you know, I've got 15 guys in front of me, and they're all mad at me. And I'm going, wait a minute, and it starts getting hot. And, you know, if you're going to want to fight me, I'm okay. Let's go. And so that's how it rolled out. It went from me trying to help somebody to me getting lit up. And next thing you know, the guy from the bar walks around behind the other guy that I'm face-to-face with, and the guy at the bar comes over the top with a punch. And it's on. There's 15 guys on top of me now. And I'm going ballistics fighting. And I'm fighting for my life because I was getting punched hard. And so I'm sitting there fighting, doing everything I can to get these guys off me. And it goes from the bar to the patio to the outside patio. And next thing you know, I see a hole. And so I crawl through the hole, and I dart to my car. I get in my car, and I start it. And I look back, and I see my four friends up against the wall fighting for their life, okay? I get out of my car. I open up the trunk, and I pull out an automatic rifle, and I sprayed it across the top of the Fullerton Red Onion. I then pointed it. The whole fight stopped. I got in my car, and I drove home. A week and a half later, I was arrested on 2 felony counts. Now, as I'm telling this story in front of the room of 70 people, my friend Melvin stands up. And he looks at me and says, Kelby, that was me. And I looked at Melvin, and this is all on video, by the way. I looked at Melvin, and I said, and I was just confused. I'm like, what do you mean it was you? And he goes, that was me. I was the guy on the crutch. I threw the first punch. And I looked at him, and I said, dude, I was the guy that fired the weapon. And we both started welling up. Now, mind you, I'm talking about forgiveness, and I'm talking about a catalyst in my life. And I'm in front of 70 people in an undisclosed location in El Monte. And the guy that I'm telling the story about stands up and says, that was me. And I'd already had breakfast with the guy. I'd already liked the guy. And so we just walked up to each other, and we started hugging. And I started weeping. Because my life was changed at that moment when God showed a full circle where forgiveness is what my topic was, and he completed it. Because this guy walked up to me, now knowing the whole side of the story, and said, forgive me, bro. And I couldn't talk. I couldn't talk for another minute. So Melvin gets the mic, and he starts telling his side of the story. And I, for the first time, heard his side of the story. After about 15 minutes, I take the mic back over, and I'm looking at the audience, and they're just going, what? The third guy, independent, in the audience, says, Kelby, I was there that night, and I saw the fight. And I was inside. I didn't see the fight outside, but I remember that night. And so we're all sitting there looking at each other like this is just a crazy God thing. The point is God is good. This guy became my new BFF. And I will know this guy for the rest of my life. And he is there just seeking truth like all of us across the country. And here's the point, guys. I don't care what you got going on with your fellow man in the Republic. I don't care what any cop has ever done to you. I don't care about any of that. What I care about is that you let it go and you forgive. Because God will show you it's going to come full circle. And those cops, those judges, they will be begging for your forgiveness sometime in the future. And I don't care if it takes 20 years. They will beg you for forgiveness for violating your rights. Here's for me, I went out to lunch with Mel. I've been texting him for 2 days, and he's now hitting the road and going on tour. And that day just kept getting better and better and better. We had an LAPD cop at the trainers meeting, and he stood up and he said, "This is what's going on in LAPD." He said, "I realized the oath of office, and I wrote an article, and I submitted it in the LAPD journal. And after submitting it in the LAPD journal, I was put on administrative leave, and I'm paid now, but they don't want me back in the LAPD." And he read the article, and it was about cops honoring their oath of office.
Wow.
We all stood up, and we gave that guy a round of applause as he was shaking and crying, visibly emotionally jacked, because he lost his job for standing up for the very thing he took an oath for. And here's the point. We had a prosecuting attorney from Washington also there at this event, also worried about the violations that are happening against the people they're trying to get her to prosecute, about ready to lose her job, saying she doesn't want to do what she wants to do anymore. Guys, all across this country, people are waking up. It's not one or two. It's in the thousands. And I'm telling you right now, this cop said they are afraid of the people now because they understand that they know you know the truth. They are afraid of the sovereign and doing whatever they can to squash this whole thing. They're afraid of the liens. They're afraid of what you know. And bottom line, we the people need to serve them and show them the truth with kindness, respect, and giving them what they're not getting from everybody else. Don't do it in anger. Do it in love. You will win way more by doing that. And I yield the floor, Robert.
Thank you very much, Kelby. The reason I moved to Phoenix, Arizona was to help a retired police officer who had been hired and fired more than any other officer on the Phoenix police force for upholding the Constitution. And I encourage you to refer your police officer contact in L.A. with Jack McLam all over the Internet. He wrote a book called Vampire Killer 2000. He's been teaching police officers and military to uphold the Constitution for, in excess of 30 years now. So if you want to put him in contact with Jack, that would be a wonderful alliance.
That'd be cool. If you can send me an email on that information, that'd be great. I'm actually outside walking right now.
Very good. Well, thanks again. We're now ready to move on to Nathan Peachy. Nathan, I don't. All I have is the impression from listening to you last night when we had a bit of a get-together to share your white paper that you're working on. Janine, did you send out a PDF to everyone before this call? Did that make it, or
did it not make it? Chief Justice Peachy sent me a little information right at the end. He wants to have some things transcribed first, and then we will get this information out on an email to everyone.
Okay. Then I will preface you, Nathan, by saying, if you have a pen and paper, I'm going to strongly encourage you to take some notes on what Nathan has to say. Nathan's comment to me last night was, "This is the most important thing that I've ever brought forth to the Republic. I'm very excited about it." And so with that introduction, Chief Justice Nathan Peachy, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Robert and Kelby. I appreciate your comments and your words of kindness and encouragement. We all need that in the Republic. We cannot survive without kindness and forgiveness and encouragement. I would like to start out with a small poem that has brought a lot of deep and personal meaning to my own life. Life is true when you make it so, and decide forever which way to go, and go and go through hell's dark night with the old torch of living right, of thinking fast and doing well, to do your best to buy and sell and hammer and bang and stretch and pull and shape and form till the day is full. Full of knowing what you have done, the path you are on, the race you've run. Knowing those from times of old, filled each day, full and bold. So you and I can step in line to smooth the path which is yours and mine. And all those who have lived before, sacrifice for our open door, which we are bound by life itself, to keep for those on our right and left, young and unborn, those yet to come, keep the door open, and your day is well done. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, to the training call tonight. I have a lot of subjects that I need to cover, and I was given approximately 50 minutes. Might be a little bit of a longer call, but there's a few things we need to bring to the attention of some of the new people. I'm going to do a brief rundown on a lot of different points that have been struggling points for some people in the Republic, some issues that have caused offense because of not clearly understanding, and so we want to cover that tonight. I understand that we have more than a quorum of states in the Republic, and we're going to diligently become proactive in going to the next step, which is organizing and networking together with the judiciary and starting to provide remedy for the people. Since we now have a quorum, we can now do that. We've got the authority to do that. Janine, did you send out that single sheet of paper called Our Timeline in History?
You know, Nathan, I didn't. I wasn't quite sure what you wanted. I can send that out now as we speak.
Okay. If you don't mind to just send that out, I don't know how many of them are at their computer. Those of them that are at the computer, it's just a little bit of a scrap sheet paper to kind of keep us in order here as I go down through the points. You can number them 1 to 30. It's a little bit of a timeline. In our historical position or foundation of our republic and a certain key events that created a shift in the direction. And there's about 30 points that are very key points that created shifts and changed the course of our republic forever to where we're at today. It all started with what I call the number one problem that we've had, that they've ever had, even back in the 1200s and 1300s, was the county problem. And it has come full circle back again to the county problem. I'm going to reveal to you today or this evening what the real problem is in America today and where the problem needs to be brought to light. Some of the old terminologies that the monarchy used, even before America was started, were words such as counts, earls, and barons. They were basically titles of nobility. And what a title of nobility is, it is when the king or the sovereign reaches down and appoints you and grants and confers upon you a certain title. You know, you could be just a common man out there and he likes what you do and maybe he sees that you've got some special talent and he's going to say, well, I'm going to grant and confer upon you this title into my realm. And now you get the position to operate what the rules and the articles are for that title. That is a title of nobility. The counts were basically military people, and they answered to the barons, I believe, if I don't have that. Yes, they answered along the line. Actually, the barons answered to the counts. The counts, I believe, were the were delegate to the king or to the sovereign, and their territory that they were the boss of they were in charge of that. Now, the shire reeve, which is the old English word for sheriff, shire meaning a division of the power of the kingdom. And the reeve was the person that controlled and carried out the enforcement actions and answered directly to the count within his jurisdiction. So the word count was settled and situated in the shire, in a shire, or a division of the king's power. That's where the word county comes from. And so when the settlers came over here in America, the monarchy was firmly established in the 13 colonies of the king, naturally. And the counties were established. The earls were here. The barons were here. Now, even here in the East Coast, if you ever travel here in the East Coast, especially the 13 states, you'll notice old names such as manor or manor, or certain old names that will ring a bell to the old monarchy that had been established here in the 13 colonies. Now, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, they actually liberated themselves and declared the states to be free and independent. However, the structure, the county structure, was still here. And the entire monarchy structure was still here. And they basically severed themselves from the sovereign king. And so they had a lot of reorganizing to do and how to function without him. And, of course, they had the monarchy structure here, so they started operating through that as well. I mean, of course, they had to. You know, everything was new, and they were just more or less experimenting. And so, in 1776, the Declaration of Independence was signed and severed all ties from the sovereign king, or the foreign potentate. And they then, in November the 15th of 1777, they wrote the Articles of Confederation. This was basically a document among the 13 colonies now named free states, independent states. They actually formed a union. The union was called United States. And I'm going to be reading from the Articles of Confederation. A couple of things. The style of this confederacy shall be the United States of America. Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. The states firm hereby severally enter into firm league of friendship with each other for their common defense. And in Article 4 of the Articles of Confederation, it talks about better securing their mutual friendship and intercourse among the people of the different states in this union, the free inhabitants of each of these states, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives, fugitives from justice were excepted. That means it didn't include them, shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of free citizens in the several states. So already they were already using the word citizen and identifying themselves as a citizen, and they were already using the terminology privileges and immunities. That then carried over into the new Constitution, and it also carried over into the 14th Amendment that they ratified in 1868. It says, the people of each state shall free ingress and regress to and from any other state. That was a privilege. And shall enjoy therein all the privileges of trade and commerce. That is what the Constitution means when it uses the word privilege. It means the privilege of ingressing and regressing to and from the states and enjoying trade and commerce among each other. There is a lot of misconception today in the patriot world about privileges and immunities, thinking that it is a word used from the corporation. Well, they do use it, and a corporate privilege is not a good thing, but you always have to take it from the paper, the word, how it was used in the context and for what purpose it was used from. Privileges means different things, just depends on what they use it for. So you really have to read the context of the document to understand it. Immunity. What would be an immunity? I believe an immunity would be you are now the sovereign, okay? Or you've got sovereign immunity from the king. That would be one. That would be an immunity that I could. There may be other immunities that you could bring to light. Any person guilty of or charged with treason, felony, or other high misdemeanor in any state who shall flee from justice and be found in any of the other states shall be brought back from the state he was found in. And then it says, full faith and credit shall be given in each of these states to the records, acts, and judicial proceedings of the courts, magistrates of every other state. It's almost the exact paraphrase that was used in the new Constitution. And Article 5 talks about the representation in Congress, freedom of speech and debate in Congress, and the state without the consent of the United States in Congress assembled shall send any embassy to or embassy from the states where it had some restrictions. No two or more states shall enter into any treaty, confederation, or alliance, whatever between them, without the consent of the United States in Congress assembled. Almost the exact same carried. This is almost the exact same paragraph that got carried over into the new Constitution. Article 7, when land forces are raised by any state for the common defense. Article 8 talks about the war, the common treasury. And Article 9 talks about the United States and Congress assembled to have sole and exclusive right and power of determining war and peace. And Article 10, the committee of the states or any nine of them shall be authorized to execute in the recess of Congress such of the powers of Congress as the United States in Congress assembled by the consent of the nine states. In other words, when Congress wasn't convening and was dissolved, it was just the states. And if work needed to be done, they could convene a committee of the states and continue the work, whatever needed to be done. And the committee was kind of, it was men from each of the states that were assembled to do certain things. Now, if you look at the Articles of Confederation, they were ratified in November the 15th, 1777. Oh, no, they were produced then, and I believe they were ratified, put in force by ratification by Maryland, March the 1st of 1781. Now, if you read the Articles of Confederation, the Articles of Confederation established the Union and the United States. It established the Congress, and the Congress consisted of senators from each of the states. That was Congress. Outside of that, they didn't have any other government. The Articles of Confederation was only the articles which created a Congress, which then got together and decided certain issues, and then they adjourned and went back home, and then the states were required by agreement of the Articles of Confederation to carry out the decisions that Congress made. There was no enforcement power. There was no government. It was just a confederation of states getting together and agreeing when in Congress assembled, making certain decisions. But there was no way to carry them out. There was no government in place, no general government in place to carry them out. And so the Articles of Confederation by themselves were not sufficient to carry out what Congress or the decisions of Congress, because there was no government necessarily to do that. It was just a decision-making body. It was just a Congress without teeth. And so what the committee did, the committee that was authorized in the Articles of Confederation, the Committee of the States, what they did is, actually it was a special committee, but they went into Philadelphia and they wanted to improve the Articles of Confederation. And they couldn't, they didn't know how to do that. They tried for a couple of months and then they decided to write a constitution for the Union, okay, and put a, and situate a government in place, a general government to carry out some of the decisions that Congress would make from time to time. And so what our republic really is, the Articles of Confederation established the Union, and there's one other very important point that I want to bring out. It established a union that was a perpetual union. That meant it could never be dissolved. It would, it shall stand forever. If you know what the word perpetual means, if I can find that, I don't have it highlighted here, but you can read it. Okay, in Article 13, it says, and that the articles thereof shall be inviolably observed by the states we respectively represent, and that the union shall be perpetual. That means it will shall stand forever and shall not be dissolved. Now, the union that we have, well, the union that we had up until 1860 still was that union. Okay? They didn't dissolve the union that was created by the Articles of Confederation. What they did in 1787 was they established or created a government for the Union so they could actually carry out the things that Congress decided upon. And so the September 1787 Constitution starts out this way. We the people. Get my little booklet here. It says, we the people. Well, the title of it is the Constitution of the United States. We the people of the United States, this is talking about the Union, the people of the Union that the Articles of Confederation created, in order to form a more perfect Union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, promote for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, the United States of America is what the Articles of Confederation said the name should be. The style of this Confederacy shall be the United States of America. Now, there's some speculation that the Constitution created a new United States. But if you read the Articles of Confederation, it did not create a new United States. In fact, the word United States was used around 48 to 50 times in the Articles of Confederation. Like in Article 5, or Article 4, for example, it says, provided that such restrictions shall not extend to any other state of which the owner is an inhabitant, provided also that no imposition, duties, or restrictions shall be laid by any state on the property of the United States or either of them. If any person guilty of or charged with treason, felony, or other high misdemeanor in any state shall flee from justice and be found in any of the United States, he shall upon... So the word United States is used 46 to 48 times in the Articles of Confederation. It did not, or the Constitution did not, create a new United States. What it did do is it created a constitution for the United States. The Articles of Confederation were not a constitution. They were articles that formed a perpetual union of states. And the Constitution was then forming a general government to carry out the things that Congress made. And, of course, in the Constitution that they did in the, with the committee, they actually improved upon Congress. Whereas the Congress was no longer just the senators from the state legislatures. You see, each of the state legislatures, they would send senators into Congress under the Articles of Confederation, and that was the composition of the Congress. Well, the new Constitution actually required the people to be involved. So they started out the Constitution, the preamble, with saying, "We the people of the United States." So they took this Constitution and they took it to the people for ratification. And when the people had ratified it, according to the Articles of Confederation requirement to do so, which involved nine states, it became the Constitution. At the end of the, on page 47 of the little booklet, Citizens' Rule Book, Article 7 of the Constitution, it says, "The ratification of the conventions of nine states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states so ratifying the same." And that is completely in line, pursuant to the Articles of Confederation. They also required nine states in order to do something in Congress. So the Constitution is actually pursuant to the Articles of Confederation. It was finishing the work what the Articles of Confederation set out to do. Okay. The next, let me grab my paper here. Northwest Ordinance. When the committee was in session in Philadelphia, they actually passed the Northwest Ordinance July 13th of 1787. And those of you that have a copy, actually let's talk about the Peace Treaty of Paris. That was 1783. Well, I don't have that on here. The Paris Treaty of Peace. Actually, what that did was it actually made it clear that all the lands, this was after the war. The 1776 was the Declaration of Independence. And the 1783 Treaty of Peace was actually when the king relinquished all his rights to his land, period. No more questions. And so that is a very important document that actually, and I believe that we could use that in our deed process as part of the allodial title claim is the Treaty of Peace, 1783. And then the Northwest Ordinance of July 13th of 1787 was another very important document. It was an ordinance for the government of the territory of the United States northwest of the River Ohio. And here again it says, "Be it ordained by the United States." That was the United States as formed under the Articles of Confederation and Congress assembled. "That the territory for the purposes of temporary government be one district subject." Now, if you read the Northwest Ordinance, it is a very important document that established a form of government in the territory of the United States where the people were not enough of people to form a state. Now, in Section 13 is where it is very, very interesting. And you really have to study that with a keen mind. It says, "And for extending the fundamental principles of civil and religious liberty, which form the basis whereon these republics, their laws and constitutions are erected, fix and establish those principles as the basis of all laws, constitutions, and governments, which forever hereafter shall be formed in the said territory, to provide also for the establishment of states and permanent governments thereupon." All right. Very important key phrase in this Northwest Ordinance territories. The republics were the people, okay? The people are in republic. The state actually is a permanent government that when they had enough of people to form a permanent government state, it was formed and sat, if you read this, just like it reads, it sat over the people, on the people because the people were the foundation. They were the ones that delegated power to the established state. The people were the foundation. They were what mattered. The people were the republics. Their law and constitutions are erected. So it's a very interesting reading there about the republics. Now, this was in 1787, where and the new constitution hadn't been finished yet. Okay, the next document that is of importance is the Constitution, what I call the Constitution for the Confederacy, the United States, September 1787. We had went through that already. Now, the preamble of the new Constitution, where it says, "We the people of the United States," that is the Declaration of the Republic. We the people are the Republic. We the people are one body of people in the nation. One nation under God, one body, indivisible, indestructible. There is no boundary lines between us. We are one united body of people over the states. Now, what the new Constitution did is the people delegated, because they ratified this new Constitution for the states, it, for the first time, the states became subject to the people. Because in the Articles of Confederation, the Articles refer to the states as sovereign, and they still are sovereign today, howbeit subject to the people. You know, the people and the state are basically one and the same. The people live in the state. I mean, without the people, there is no state. So we the people of the United States is the proclamation, is the declaration, is the establishment of this one republic. Now, in this one republic, there is no geographical boundary lines. We operate within districts. The general government operates within districts. Just like where I grew up in Pennsylvania, you know, our church, we also operated the body of church within districts. Everybody was, you know, one in the body, and there was many, and if it grew too large, we formed another district. A district is simply a way to function, for certain people to function together, and then there's the other part. So that's how the republic was established in the Constitution, was to be operated within districts, you know, like the district courts and the different districts. So district is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It means that we're all united and all one republic, but we overlay over the states, and the states are subject to we the people. Okay. The next important act that they did was Northwest Ordinance Act was renewed. The Northwest Ordinance Act was renewed, and actually it wasn't renewed. It was. Let me see here. Okay, I missed a couple things here. The March the 4th of 1789 was when Congress, under the new Constitution, assembled. And they actually outlined the oaths of office and also the oath to support the Constitution. That was the first act of Congress, March the 4th of 1789. August the 7th of 1789, the Northwest Ordinance was again enacted, and this is how it reads. Whereas, in order that the Ordinance of the United States in Congress assembled for the government of the territory northwest of the river. He's referring to the ordinance that was passed in 1787 by the prior Congress. And there was a change that needed to be made in this, but everything is intact. They didn't change the act except a couple things, because in the original Northwest Ordinance, the governors that were established to do the territorial government actually answered directly to Congress. Well, since they established the new Constitution, they now answered directly to the President, which answered to the Congress. So that's the only change that they made in the reenactment of the Northwest Ordinance of 1789. The next important act that they did was September the 24th of 1789, and that is when they established the Judiciary Act. The Judiciary Act actually defined and outlined the judicial system for the republic. You know, we have one republic, one body of people, and we were we the people in order to provide established justice to ensure domestic tranquility for the new, for the union. We formed a new justice system, but it would be limited to certain things, just things that pertain to the Constitution or the general government affairs. The states were still, their courts and their structure of courts were left intact, and as long as the judges took an oath to support the Constitution, they'll work together as in a quasi-relationship. That means if a state judge has a hearing or makes a ruling or, you know, decides a case or however the issue may be, and if it gets appealed over to the district court, if the people think that there is a constitutional issue here involved, it can actually get removed over there or appealed over there. And if it's right, you know, the federal courts don't take jurisdiction. You know, I had that experience down in West Virginia this week. Now, I might get into that a little bit later on. So the oath of office of March 4th of 1789 actually established, required Congress, senators, and the representatives to take an oath to support the Constitution. These were not oaths of offices. These were only oaths to support the Constitution. Congress was, they represented the sovereign people. They are not under the United States government. Congress is representatives and the delegates of the people. They are over the government. They are over the United States general government. Congress is. They are superior to the United States government. They are the voice and the representation of we the people. So they do not need an oath to office. In fact, they shouldn't have one. They only have an oath to support the Constitution, and that's it. The next important act was done, April the 30th of 1790, the Punishment of Crimes Against the United States Act. A very important act. We're going to talk more of that tomorrow night. This act is still in use today. I don't believe, unless somebody finds differently, this act hasn't been repealed. Certain sections may have been, but it is still a general old law in the books. And this act is our remedy in the Republic to deal with the people that are constantly harassing us and violating our rights. We need to start using this act. Act of April 30, 1790. The next act that was of significance was the Washington City Incorporation Article, Charter, on May the 3rd of 1802. You write that down. May the 3rd of 1802, they chartered a corporation for the inhabitants of the city of Washington in the District of Columbia. Now, the District of Columbia was a district just like all the other districts in the Republic. You see, each state, if you read the Judiciary Act, was a district within the form of the general government for the Republic. So the District of Columbia was the district, whereas Congress had exclusive legislation. And that district had two cities. It had a city of Washington and a city of Alexandria. It had two counties, 10 square miles. It had the county of Alexander and the Washington County. Now, later on in 1840s or 50s, they receded the county of Alexandria back to Virginia again, so the 10-square-mile district is no longer 10 square miles today. It is only about half that. Okay, the next important act that was done was Ohio admitted to the Union, November the 29th of 1802. Actually, on April the 30th, they actually provided to form Ohio as a state for the Union, and there was a technical error that actually occurred that actually it was not, I mean, they were admitted in the union, but it wasn't, there was a technical error, and they actually just redid that, I think back in the late 1900s, maybe, they did that. Somebody in Ohio probably knows more about that. The next significant act was the act of August the 3rd of 1854. Well, actually, I missed one. Now, that was the Naturalization Act of 1802. The Naturalization Act actually defined a citizen of the United States. And I hear a lot of folks talking and concerned, rightfully so, we should be concerned, about using the word citizen. But just like the word fee simple means differently here than it does over in England, like the fee simple title to land, doesn't mean the same thing. Here in America, the word citizen means, or in order to be a lawful citizen here in America, you need to be one of the sovereign people of the Republic. You cannot become a citizen of the United States unless you are one of the sovereign people. So the word sovereign citizen is an oxymoron. It is a wrong definition and the wrong way to say it. What you need to say is you need to say, I'm a citizen of the sovereign people. You see how that changes the entire meaning of it? So in order to become a citizen of the sovereign people, you had to qualify according to the Naturalization Act of 1802. You had to renounce and renege any allegiance to any foreign potentate, any foreign king, any sovereign. In other words, you could not be have allegiance to a sovereign or a proclaimed sovereign or to any other state or a foreign state. You had to be the sovereign in order to become a citizen of the United States. You were the sovereign. In other words, outside of that, you weren't considered a citizen. And this is another reason that a lot of the like the aliens or the black people were not allowed a citizenship. Okay? Now, the next act that was very significant that we need to read and use in our land patent process was August the 3rd of 1854. The United States land grants to the states declared them to be all fee simple. Now, the blacks, and I'm going to read the act, it's very important. Be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that in all cases where lands have been or shall hereafter be granted by any law of Congress to any one of the several states and territories, and where said law does not convey the fee simple title of such lands or require patents to be issued, therefore, it's your land patents, the lists of such lands which have been or may hereafter be certified by the Commissioner of the General Land Office under the seal of said office, either as originals or copies of the originals or records, shall be regarded as conveying the fee simple of all the lands embraced in such lists that are of the character contemplated by such act of Congress and intended to be granted thereby. But where lands embraced in such lists are not of the character embraced by such acts of Congress and are not intended to be granted thereby, said lists, so far as these lands are concerned, shall be perfectly null and void, and no right, title, claim, or interest shall be conveyed. August the 8th of 1854. This is your blanket cover, folks, for your land patents. And if you look at the old 1828 Noah Webster's Dictionary, a fee simple is actually not a bad word. It's actually a very good word. It is actually an alloidal title. Now, the word fee simple over in England is doesn't mean that, but it does here in America, according to Noah Webster's Dictionary. Let me read it. In the United States, an estate in fee simple is what is called in English law an alloidal estate, held by a person in his own right. He is actually a freeholder. Just like freeholders over here in America, the word means differently here than it used to over in England. The word freeholder over in England, under the old monarchy, actually were people, were barons that owned estates and had a right to the estate, but they were subject to the king. Here in America, we don't have that anymore. The freeholders over here in America actually means the possession to a land is an estate which a man owns in his own right, subject to no superior, nor to any conditions. One who owns an estate in fee simple. So that is what the old Noah-Webster's Dictionary of 1828 actually defines the freeholder and fee simple. Now here, Act of 1845, Congress just gave us a blanket cover for all the lands that had been granted or designated or had been within the territories of the United States one time. So if you live in any of the states that had joined the Union by virtue of the Northwest Ordinance Territory or the other territorial acts of Congress, you would qualify for this blanket coverage. The only state that I could think of that would not qualify would probably be the 13 colonies, which were the 13 original states, because they actually had land grants. And I believe the blanket approval for that, since I'm thinking about it, and I'm hoping you're thinking with me here, is the Paris Peace Treaty. So here we've got basically an act of Congress designating your lands as fee simple, as freehold, alloidal, with a land patent, blanket coverage for all the states outside the 13 colonies, and the Paris Peace Treaty actually did that for the other 13 states. So we need to really consider looking at that and using that when we're doing the land patents and the titles. Okay, the next important turning point was when Texas was admitted into the Union. Now, Texas was a republic, and the act actually describes it that, Act of December 29th of 1845. It says, whereas the Congress of the United States by joint resolution approved March the 1st, 1845, did consent that the territory properly included within and rightfully belonging to the Republic of Texas might be erected into a new state to be called the State of Texas. This was by Act of Congress, December 29th of 1845, with a republican form of government to be adopted by the people of said republic by deputies in convention assembled. So the Republic of Texas, actually, they were a republic, but they actually were erected into a new state with a republican form of government, just like all the other states now. And you've got to understand, just like the Northwest Ordinance that they passed in 1789 designated the many republics, yet when they created or established a permanent government, they were a state of the Union. Now, the people were the republic. So basically, we are now one republic and not many republics. August the 6th of 1861 is the next major turning point. They established an Oath of Allegiance. The Oath of Allegiance, August 6, 1861. An act requiring an Oath of Allegiance to support the Constitution of the United States to be administered to persons in the civil service of the United States. That it shall be the duty of the heads of the several departments, which was the civil department, to be administered this type of an Oath of Allegiance. This was when the troubles were starting for the Republic. The next act of significance was the Corporate Officers Fraud Act of March the 2nd of 1863. This is another act that we can actually use. The act hasn't been repealed to my knowledge, and we need to use it. And this is what they are afraid of. The corporation, they know that we're coming back in the Republic, and when we start holding this out, they are going to run for the hills, some of them. Corporate Officers Fraud Act. And here's what it says that is so significant. In Section 8, be it further enacted that no officer or agent of any banking or other commercial corporation and no member of any mercantile or trading firm or person directly or indirectly interested in the pecuniary profits, that's money profits, or contracts of such corporation or firm shall be employed or shall act as an officer or agent of the United States. For the transaction of business with such corporation or firm, and every such officer, agent or member or person so interested who shall so act shall upon conviction be punished by a fine of not more than $2,000 and by imprisonment for a term exceeding 2 years. So this is the an act that was put in use. I'm not really sure why they did that, but I believe some good people in the Congress saw what was coming, and they probably decided that it needs to be passed. But we can use this act, and it will cover most of the ills and the ills that we have today, which I'm going to get into in a few minutes. The next act that was of significance was the United States Citizenship Act of April the 9th of 1866. Let me back up a little bit here. On July the 2nd of 1862, they passed another act called an Act to Prescribe an Oath of Office. In 1861, they prescribed the Oath of Allegiance. And now they pass another act prescribing an oath of office for the civil office holders. That would be the executive department of the president, the military, or the Navy department. They had to take a new civil oath of office, which said, I do further swear or affirm that to the best of my knowledge and ability, I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. You see, they were entering an office, the civil office of the executive department. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing out of place there. Okay, the next act was the United States Citizenship Act of April 9th of 1866. And this is what it reads. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that all persons born in the United States and not subject to any foreign power, excluding Indians, not taxed, are hereby declared to be citizens of the United States. And such citizens of every race and color, without regard to any previous condition of slavery and voluntary servitude, except as punishment for crime. And so, it says they will have the same rights as all the other citizens to hold, sell, purchase, lease, buy properties, to have full and equal benefit of all the laws and proceedings for the security of person and property as is enjoyed by white citizens, and shall be subject to like punishments, pains, penalties, and to none other any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom to the contrary, notwithstanding. And so, this was done in 1866, which basically by act of Congress was the act that actually by law gave lawful citizenship to the black people. Okay? Now, in July the 21st of 1868, they made an amendment to the Constitution based on the act that they had just passed in 1866. Almost right after that, they actually started working on the 14th Amendment. I think it was December of 1866. And so by 1868, July 21, it was declared ratified. And this is what it says. All persons born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. This is their borrowing language from back in the Articles of Confederation, an article, whatever that article number was. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So the 14th Amendment is one of the best remedies that we have today to take back our freedom. And we can actually use the 14th Amendment to take back the republic in the courts today, in the de facto courts. Okay. The the 21. I'm gonna was Andrew Johnson's Proclamation of the Republic. I'm gonna wait to last. That's a very nice little ending that I'm gonna use for the, this lecture. The next act that was of significance was the Corporation Act of 1870. That is where they designated an act, the Corporation Act of 1870, how to set up corporations in the District of Columbia. The next act of significance, or of destruction, I should say, was the Organic Act of District of Columbia of February the 21st of 1871. This is where Abraham Lincoln, he won the battle for the Union, okay, keeping the Republic intact. The South lost the war. They were funded to divide the Republic. And now there was other legitimate reasons of commerce, but behind the scenes they were being used to divide the Republic and destroy the Republic. The Republic, because of who we are as private landholders, as sovereigns on the land, did not sit well with other sovereigns and other nations that would have liked to overtake us. They didn't like that at all. That in order to be a citizen of the United States, you had to be the sovereign. And so they tried to destroy that. And the Civil War was a very very grievous time in our nation's history. But the Act of 1871, they found a little loophole how they then could take us over. And this is what they did. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives that all that part of the territory of the United States included within the limits of the District of Columbia, and the same is hereby created into a government. This is where the Republic was stolen from us. You see, the districts, if you can just imagine, the Republic is the people, one nation under God, and we operated under, we operate the Constitution within the boundaries of districts. We really didn't have anything other than the Constitution and then the court buildings, you know, that were established within the districts. That was where the Republic was based. Now they did have a seat of government where they had the Supreme Court, and they had the Congress House, the White House, in the District of Columbia, which was one district. And the only thing there was Congress had exclusive legislation over that area. But when they did the Corporation Act, if you carefully read it, it says the part of the territory of the United States within the limits of the District of Columbia is created into a government. That's where they stole the Republic. Can sue and be sued is a body corporate, a body politic separate. And this is where our problems come in. Now, in the Act, paging through the Acts here, or through these sections, in Section 28, it says, and be it further enacted that the said legislative assembly shall have power to create by general law, modify, repeal, or amend within said district corporations, aggregate for religious, charitable, education, industrial, or commercial purposes, and to define their powers and liabilities. And here it says, provided that the powers of corporations so created shall be limited to the District of Columbia. That's our protection. That is a way out for us. And I'm going to tie that in too. And here's what else is significant in the Act. And I hope you, those of you that have a copy of that, are marking this up. Okay. All right. And Section 40 is very significant what happened. It said, the charters of the cities of Washington and Georgetown shall be repealed on and after the first day of June, 1871, and all offices of said corporations abolished at that date. In other words, the Washington City Corporation Charter was nullified and abolished. That was established in 1802. And it says that all the property of said corporations – property of the city of Washington, the entire property and the territory and the land and everything, whereas was the seat of the government for the republic, and of the county of Washington shall become vested in the said District of Columbia. That's where they stole the republic. And it became in effect June the 1st of 1871. And in my book, in my opinion, unless I ever find out differently, for now, I'm of the opinion very firmly that the Republic died on June 1 of 1871. On paper, it died. And that's the death point for the Republic. Okay, the next area of importance was the 1773 revised statutes were printed. And interesting that it had to happen right at that time. And also in 1773, the Congress started requiring that all the Congress members, the Senate and the House, they were now starting to require to be using the civil oath of office that was established in 1862. The civil oath of office was established for the civil office holders to circumvent traitorous people. Now, the Congress started requiring their members in 1873 to take that oath of office.
You just said it right.
And that is where Congress now became an administrative arm of the new corporation, 1873. The next, and I'm just about finished here, the next act that was of significance was the U.S. Code, Title V, the oaths of offices were enacted into positive law on September 6, 1966. So under positive law of the de facto Congress, not our Congress, but the de facto Congress, the Congress members have to take that oath. Back in 1873, I don't think they passed a law to do that, but they just did. And maybe the House or the Senate, maybe among the House archives, maybe they made a resolution that they will all have to take that oath. You know, when we have the keys to the vote, we may be able to discover that, but I cannot find where they were required to take that oath of office, the Congress members. Why they changed it, I don't know. But probably it was the in-house traders and some bankers that said, oh, you're going to have to take the civil oath of office. And maybe they were gagged or whatever. You know, some of the old archives might review that information someday. In September the 3rd of 1946, the National Association of Counties was formed as the Delaware Corporation. October the 7th of 1963, this association of counties was incorporated within the District of Columbia, and they are active today. It is the number one problem in America today, is the National Association of County Corporation formed and operating as an active component of the Washington, D.C., a corporation of Washington, D.C. This is where your problem lies, people, today. The problem that the people had in the beginning of the Republic was the county, and the problem that we have today is the county. What they did is the state legislatures back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, they all passed by special legislation or some form or the other, they passed what they called the County Code Act. And the counties were all incorporated, and they started operating incorporated governments completely illegally. And then they are all enjoined. All the counties, or almost all the counties, are now members of the National Association of Counties, which is a District of Columbia corporation. If you recall what I just read in the Corporation Act of 1871, it says that the corporations within the District of Columbia, formed in the District of Columbia, their powers are limited to the District of Columbia. Now, I was very excited when I found this because now I've got a paper trail that I can absolutely prove on paper through legitimate acts of Congress that we can take and we can prove our county governments are illegal. They do not have power out here. They know it, and they are afraid we're going to find out. That is why people operating within the county It is so difficult to get justice today. If you attest to being in the county, you are tying right into the jurisdiction of the corporation and ultimately another sovereign. And that is where we have lost our freedom. And I want to make it known on this phone call tonight officially that I have officially laid to rest the idea, the subject about a county settlement document. I would like to take the opportunity to apologize to you, to everybody on this phone call, and everybody in the Republic. I participated and probably was one of the first ones to start actively engaging in the idea of a county settlement document. I apologize. I am sorry. I hope you can all forgive me. It is not the right thing to do. It is the wrong thing to do. Those of you that have filed a county settlement document, I would highly encourage you to go and remove it from the records. It will never bring you remedy. It is the problem. Will always be the problem. So take that as it is. This is my official apology and my plea for forgiveness to clear it publicly so we can move on. What the right thing is to do is to get all of your, if you own a house or some land, what you need to do is you are the count. And the county that you live within is, you live within your county. So if your name is Rick Weiner and you own a piece of property, if you ever come across a form that requires for, well, what county do you live in? The appropriate name would be Rick Weiner. I live in Rick Weiner County, because the word county is a title for count, and it is a military agent operating underneath, subject to the king. The county is our problem today, and the National Association of Counties, go on their website. They have a very well done website. They are the problem in America today. You know, when we file paperwork in the counties, it doesn't go more than a week till all the other county agents know about it. How do they know it so fast? They communicate through the network or through the county association corporation. Every county's got a liaison, a representative that sits in this corporation, sits in this association as a corporation. They go down to Washington, D.C., and they lobby. So all the counties are subject to govern according to what this association rules. We are not governed by the Constitution today. We are governed by the National Association of Counties. And that's the problem. Do not use the word county. Get completely out of the word county. A land patent does not use the word county. The United States, when they granted lands, they granted large tracts of lands, had nothing to do with the county. Now, sometimes they in order to reference a location, they'll use the word county, but it has nothing to do with the county jurisdiction. Nothing, period. It is your land. You're the man on the land. You own the land. And if you do that, you will become free when you live in your county, not somebody else's county. So, that is the lecture for tonight. I would like to open up for questions. If you have any questions about this, we want to continue the call tomorrow night with our judges and justices and the attorney generals. Since we have a quorum in the Republic now of the states, we need to become very proactive in becoming unified. We can learn a lot of things from the National Association of Counties. They are very well organized, extremely well organized. And they are tied right into the security systems of the federal agents, and they are the problem. And they do not allow you, when you go down into the county courthouse, it's incorporated, it is under the jurisdiction of the county commissioner, and they will not allow you justice if you allege to live in the county. If you come in and you've got a loyal title to your land, as a freeholder, and you do not reference yourself as living in the county, they don't have jurisdiction over you. And they know it.
So, Nathan, I want to pause you for a minute to encapsulate what you're saying and to reinforce what you're saying from well, firstly, let's pause on the county, because you have taken us from Magna Carta to Delaware corporations and the National Association of Counties. You have just laid out on this phone call over the last hour a white paper. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And we want to transcribe this, and then
very
I'm going
good.
To take it, and we want to fill in the blanks and put it out. Yes, sir.
We have a couple hundred people on this call. Some of you have spare time. I am soliciting your active support this week to as many of you who can lend your support to transcribing this call and this timeline. The timeline that Nathan referenced is called Our Timeline in History. There's a couple of gaps in it, I see, Nathan, that you filled in as you spoke.
Yep.
I've asked Janine to ask Chuckers to get it up on his website as quick as possible. He seems to be the fastest responder to getting stuff posted. So I am asking you, if you're listening to this call, what Nathan has just laid out is fundamental. Not only the words that he's used and the time frames he's used, but Nathan, do you have each of the documents that you've referenced? Do you have
Absolutely.
Copies of
Everyone
all those?
Them, yes.
And you have them in a PDF format?
Yes, I was intending to put everything in the PDF format, but I just didn't get the time to do it. It will be everything in a PDF format, and we'll put it on the website with the white
okay,
paper.
Okay, so my request to all of you on this call is, number one, if you have the capacity and are willing to transcribe this call, will you please send an email to questions@therepublicoftheunitedstates.org and put in the subject line transcription, and just give us your details and what part of it you're willing to do. Like, if we can break it up into, you know, three or four sections, it'll happen quickly. I think this is vital. I think it is imperative that we get this white paper out into everybody's hands with the supporting PDF documents for us all to study and get our heads around. It's going to dissolve so much of the friction and of the confusing ideas of where it all started and where it stopped. So that's my request right off the bat. Now
Robert, if you don't mind, if we could, I would like for Nathan to announce the launch of the One Supreme Court's website.
Okay, we'll get there in just a minute. We're clearly going to get that. It'll be the next step here. Okay, let's go back to your National Association of Counties, Nathan.
Yes.
3 years ago, I organized tried to organize senators and congressmen from the 50 states, from the 3,300 counties across the country to come to Phoenix to get together to talk about constitutionally based legislation that each state could introduce to as a firewall against the federal government and all of their impositions. This is before I realized the Republic was – well, it was before the Republic even was birthed. In that, I was looking for guest speakers. I had the opportunity to talk to a fellow, I believe he was out of Texas, and he told me a tale that's now starting to make sense from what you've just said.
Okay.
He said, if you look at the surveys of the United States, they're all broken up into plats and grids and all this stuff and into counties. He says, if you go back to look at where those records are held, they're held in England. The company that does those is in England. He says the National Association of Counties is part of the United Nations, is part of the New World Order, that the training that they give on a county level, nationwide, state across the country, is all very choreographed. And so folks at a county level think, oh, we really want to learn how to run our county better.
So they go for training, and they get, unbeknownst to them, trained and brainwashed into a system which is a grid which overlays the United States and overlays it with a de facto framework rather than the freedom and the independence that each county should be acting from. There's zero concept in their minds of that they're supposed to defend the Constitution and our unalienable rights and our rights to own our land and the whole deal. So I say that to you to say that's just the thumbnail sketch of a memory I had of a guy who was going to be one of our speakers. And his comment to me was, the time's not right. So we didn't have him as a guest speaker. And so anyone who's researching this, if you want to take some of those anecdotal comments and match that up with what Nathan has just said, I think we might find a picture emerging here.
Yes, absolutely. I want to...
So Nathan,
yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you go ahead and announce tomorrow.
Okay. The just to show you how corrupt everything is, for example, in the West Virginia Constitution, the legislators were not allowed to allow corporations unless the city or the town was to a certain population. Well, today, if you walk into the courthouse, the clerk of courts is a corporation all by herself. The judge is a corporation. Everybody is a corporation within the county corporation. And then they're a member of the it's just shocking what I was able to discover this week. And it looks like impossible. But there is victory coming. Victory is in becoming organized in the republic and forgiving each other, like Kelby made mention tonight, and I really appreciated him sharing his story. We need to forgive. When we forgive, we receive understanding, and we receive the ability and wisdom to move forward and become successful. If you do not forgive, you will become locked down and the bond, and you will be in bondage, and you will not be successful. Now, we all do things wrong. I've done things wrong. When I look back the last 2 years, I've done a lot of things wrong. But I always attempt to move on and forgive the people and ask for forgiveness myself for those that I have offended so we can actually move on together. We need to take this country back. The only way we can take it back is, number one, through the taking our land back in Illoital, using the laws that we have. And then another tidbit, which we're going to talk about tomorrow night, is we cannot use U.S. code in any of our documents when doing court cases. When you use U.S. code, you automatically get pulled back into the county jurisdiction.
So Nathan, let's talk about your call tomorrow night. Let's talk about who you're inviting to it. I've actually had questions from governors saying they're interested in hearing about it. There's a lot of folks who want to get their head around what you're talking about. So please talk about your call. Who's invited? Who's not? And why?
Well,
and where you want to take it?
The judges. It's meant to be a judges' call. And what it is, we want to start organizing and finding out where are the good leaders. Now, I know most of us are good leaders that in the Republic, okay? Some people are busy. Some people are sitting back on the sidelines. But I want to find out where are the good, proactive leaders out there that want to get roll up their sleeves and pitch and help us. This is more a organizational call to start organizing, finding out who's who, what are they willing to do? Because we want to move forward now and become very proactive in all the states and start dealing with the county issue, the county problem issue. We just had a little bit of example in West Virginia. I'll just take a minute to go through that example. You all know Thomas Deegan. He was the governor for West Virginia. Well, he had a county problem. And we put together a lawsuit, and he gave me warrant of attorney and a letter patent of plenipotentiary powers and some very unique terms to use, and I work with him to take care of his problem that he had. They wanted to put him in jail, and so we actually sued, brought a lawsuit forward in federal court against the county corporation and against the plaintiff, which was the State of West Virginia Corporation, because the state is nothing more than a confederacy of the county corporations, folks. That is all they are. They are not the real state. And I just laid it right out in a lawsuit, and I used original law, general law, and we filed it in federal district court, and the judge stayed the lawsuit. Now, when we went for a motion to stay the court proceeding against Thomas Deegan, the judge was very considerate, and he wrote out a very three-page letter of why he is going to deny Thomas Deegan a stay for the state court proceeding. In other words, we didn't want the state to continue prosecuting Thomas Deegan until the federal matter is heard. And the federal matter was we had sent them a notice to remove the case into our ecclesiastical court. And so the state said, oh, we don't have to do that. We're going to continue prosecuting. And so they did. But the federal lawsuit is stayed. And so the judge knows, you know, it's going to be interesting how this is going to play out. But the thing about it is, February the 27th was the prosecution date where he went into court to be tried. That was Tuesday, I think. And he went in, and they sentenced him, or told him they're going to sentence him, and then they told him to come back home again, and to come back in the morning, and then they're going to tell him his sentence. They did not like the lawsuit at all. They were very perturbed about it. And so they was going to try to do a plea agreement with him, you know, and sentence reduction if he would plead guilty. Well, if he would plead guilty, that would put the whole lawsuit out the door. But in the lawsuit, we ask for the federal judge to pierce the corporate veil for the county. And we just highlight it where they don't have jurisdiction because they're a corporation. And you know, we made everything very plain to see, to pierce the corporate veil. Well, they don't, you know, the state don't like that lawsuit. They're completely against it. There's nothing they can do. Well, the next morning, or the next afternoon, which it was actually yesterday, Galen Yoder up here, some police drove in there, and they wanted to know where's Thomas Deegan. The sheriffs out there are really upset down there, and there's a lawsuit down there, and they want to get Thomas Deegan. And Galen said, "Well, he doesn't know." Well, what happened was he had signed a new ASR. He had put his signature on mine as a witness to my signature on the ASR. And I had submitted my ASR as well as Thomas Deegan's ASR in the federal lawsuit. And they got served with this lawsuit. And so my address, my phone number was on there. Galen Yoder's name was on there. They took the work and the they went through the effort to send out the cops to go to Galen Yoder to find out where, if he knows where Thomas is. And my address was on there, and my phone number was on there, and they never contacted me. Now, I call that a success. They understand who we are. And in one of the hearings down there, they started talking about Mr. Peachy and about the new government that's forming. And they don't agree with it. But they know we're here.
Yeah. Well, I have my first question for you then in this regard. It's, please clarify the proper and lawful place the ecclesiastical court has within our republic. I have heard two different answers. One, the court will be the court of the republic. And two, the court is a separate court from the republic court judicial system. This court offers a 508c1a exemption that is powerful. Nevertheless, this court is not the official court's justice system. Thank you for your clarification.
Okay. I appreciate that question because a lot of people had that question. I had that question too, and we're still learning on that. But here's an answer to that. You have to go back to the act, the criminal act that was passed in 1802. Let me find that, and I want to read just a very, very short brief to you. Find the criminal act. Yes, go ahead, Robert.
While you're doing that, the president did respond a couple of lines to that question, and I wanted to just read those
while you're getting that.
He said, "Hi, Robert. The ecclesiastical courts should be operated within our district court system. They should only be available at the request of the accused and never force anyone into their jurisdiction. These courts are not religious courts, but courts of law that will follow common law principles. That is what I am presenting to Congress, and they will determine the details. God bless, Tim."
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah, that's a very, very good answer. If I want to add, I'll add my 2 cents worth. I'll try to keep it short. The if you read the Crime Act of April 30th, 1790, which is still a valid act, it's still in the books, in there, it says, if we can find the section here, it uses a very peculiar term that you don't find much elsewhere. And it actually has to do with this subject. Okay. It says the Crime Act of 1790 makes reference to the terminology, if someone commits an offense that is punishable by death, it says the benefit of the clergy shall not be used. Outside of that, it allows it to be used. Now, we all know that our religion here in America was established by is Christian religion. And most of us are aware, and you know, we may have differences of opinion on a lot of things, but the fundamental principle, the substance of the Christian religion is that Christ died on the cross, he shed his blood, made a covenant with man, you and me, upon the confession of his name, upon the baptism and confession in his name for the forgiveness of our sins, the law has been nailed to the cross. The law has no effect. It is null and void if you have that covenant with him. So, the benefit of the clergy was if somebody did something wrong, and, you know, even in the law, this is civil law, and if he repented of it and he made it right, and the ecclesia or the ecclesiastical gathering or tribunal or the clergy determined that he has properly repented, that the punishment of the law should be stayed. And that's just the working of the jury. That very substance of doing that is embedded in our republic, in our district courts, in our fundamental law system in America. If the jury, even though you break the law, if you have made it right, or if your spirit was good about it, if you didn't have a wrong intent, the jury can acquit you from the law. They can say, well, in this instance, we're not going to give you permission to carry out the execution of the law. The case dismissed. The jury has the power to do that. So the very fundamental of ecclesiastical function is already embedded in our republic constitution without as many words. So, all except in cases of death, if you deserve to die according to the law, if there is something that you committed that is a death penalty according to the civil law, the benefit of the clergy is prohibited.
We'll have to get into it in more depth at a later time because we've really gone a long time on this call. But I think it's important that we take the questions that we have here. So,
okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, let's try to keep it brief as we work our way through.
Yes.
Janine, the first caller we have in the queue.
Yes, and callers, please keep your questions short and concise. I am going to be timing you. Please try to keep your question to 2 minutes. If you'd like to ask a question, please press *6 on your phone and confirm by pressing *1. The first caller in the queue is Mark Gardner from Nevada. Go ahead, Mark.
And just before you come on, Mark, if you would hold 1 second. Now what Nathan has been talking about on this call, the entire call, is our timeline in history. Chuckers has just posted it on the website,
at republicsg.info. And Janine, where is it physically posted on the?
It'll be item number one under latest updates.
Oh yeah, there it is. So it's there already. You can click on it and download the PDF. So that'll be helpful as you replay the call and also to see clearly what Nathan's been talking about. Go ahead, Mark. Thanks for holding.
Sure. Hi, everybody. Nathan, your white paper would be a very good piece of history for the Freedom University education that maybe something we can call that, which might be part of the naturalization process, which is this part of this membership process in a communication system that we're trying to develop a prototype for. So I would suggest that we put that white paper as part of the education of the Republic in the naturalization process.
Well, good. I appreciate that, Mark.
You know, yeah, I think that would be in there. I mean, I'm not the one that's really really it goes with the education guys in the Congress. So, but I'm going to recommend that because I think
yeah,
that
hopefully
would be very,
some of them are listening tonight.
Yeah.
So
also, I got a
yes.
In Nevada, we're working on a county structures act, and I'm now learning that it should now be called the County District Conversion Act.
I think so, too, or something, yeah. Well, you see, the bottom line, even if you understood the land patent, okay, if you are the if you own your own land, who's the boss on your land?
You are. You're the
you
king.
Are.
You're the your own castle,
yeah.
Right?
Right. And do you have the right to carry a gun to protect your land?
Sure. You
well,
you make your own
you
rules.
Then you are the count. Then let's say you're on your land protecting your own castle. Then you are the count. So what county do you live in? Mark Gardner. That's right.
That sounds weird.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I got a question about okay, we're in this concept.
Make it quick.
Of,
you've gotten 8 seconds.
Okay.
Got longer than that. No? Okay.
I'll have to talk to you later.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Thank
Bye.
You. The next caller is identified Badger is all I have from Skype. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us, caller?
Jeanine, I think you unmuted the next caller.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we'll go
this
there.
This is
Justice Gorla. Low blood sugar.
Yeah, low blood sugar. That's right. All right, Justice Gorla, your 2 minutes are starting now.
Thank you. Just a quick comment, Justice Peachy. Thank you so much for all your research. It's just incredible what you accomplished. I just wanted to advise Justice Peachy and Jeanine that my transcription of what Justice Peachy just said is in an email to both of you as we speak. And if you would be kind enough to send that out to as many people as possible so they can assist in correcting any errors or misspellings or lack of information based on the recording that was just posted, I would appreciate it. I don't have a lot of time, but my contribution is in your hands as we speak in email.
Awesome.
Thank
you, Joan.
Awesome. Awesome.
I yield the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
Okay, now then, Badger, I'll unmute the right one this time. I'm sorry about that. And go ahead, you have the floor.
Wow. Okay, this is Badger. I just wanted to say that when they were talking about setting up the counties, that happened when William the Bastard, Duke of Normandy, crossed the canal and whipped over King Harold and took over England. And that's why...
Badger, I'm having a bit of a difficult time. You have such a deep voice. It's hard to hear it. Is there a way you can either speak either closer to the mic or further from it? Something is... Your sound's kind of garbled. Can you try again?
Well, I'll try it again.
Oh, that's better. Yeah, whatever. That sounds better.
Okay. I'm just saying, you know, that whenever... you know, here's the thing about England, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old boy over in Normandy there called William the Bastard, Duke of Normandy.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And he crossed the canal, and my family crossed it with him. and they whipped the English. And that's when they set all this up. That's when they set the county stuff up.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
You have to take that in consideration.
Right.
And with that, I'll yield.
I appreciate all you do.
Yep.
Thank you,
Badger.
Thank you. Our next caller is from North Dakota. Go ahead, North Dakota. Your 2 minutes starts now.
William the Bat.
Nathan, this is Monty Olson, and I'm asking concerning the county. Now, if I declare my land as Monty Laverne Olson County, do I need to put it in the legal newspaper for 30 weeks at Stanley, North Dakota, which is the former county I lived in?
Okay. I want to cut that. I'll give you a good answer. That was more or less an allegorical statement that I made that you would put your name down as a county. I would not advise you, however, in real life, because they would come after you and say, oh, you're impersonating, or, you know, you're trying to create a new district. I wouldn't use the word county, period. You could just say it Monty Olson Estate or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thank you for that. And how about now when we have our entire Republic of North Dakota as one county, how would you suggest we deal with that?
You mean right now North Dakota is just one county?
Correct.
You mean even the de facto world?
No. In the
okay.
Republic.
Oh, I see. Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I have the answer for that. What I would suggest you get a land patent and do the deed correction process, okay? And now you are a freeholder on your land, or your land is a freehold. And they should leave you alone. And if everybody does that, your jurisdiction is on your land. And you're the king of your land. And you really don't need county.
Does that mean I have one more time?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry,
what was your question again, Monty? Could you ask that again?
Does that mean I have no more time? Because I was just recently given a letter from the court system demanding me to fill out stuff to become part of a jury pool.
Well, you might want to just send them in your freehold, your land patent, and say that you're not participating in their county system.
Thank you, Nathan.
Or you might want to go in and be a good jury.
That's what I was going to suggest. If he's got some free time, I'm not thinking Monty does. He's always working. But if he was the sort of guy who had free time, he could go in there and create quite a stir by upholding his rights and voting against.
Gentlemen, I need to move on to the next caller.
All right.
Thank you so much. The next caller is, last name is Nelson, I believe. Go ahead, Nelson, your time starts now.
Oh, thank you very much. Greetings. God bless everybody. On the county issue, I'm not sure if we can change it to districts, if that would work or not, but allodial deed, allodial title, since it bears no liens or encumbrances or ties to any debt because it's free and clear, would serve as a foundation for changing the county to another district or a free land. About the issues would be county elections. If there's anything there, might have to change some titles or anything like that.
This is my opinion. And this is just an opinion, but I think for right now, in the Republic, we should all become very proactive in getting our land patents and in helping our fellow man to do the same. I think at some point in time in the future, we will probably have a solution for that. But I don't think it's time for that right now, because we need to get a lot of people proactive in getting the land patent right now. Then we'll cover that. I think that would be premature. That's just my opinion.
Should we cover a land patent through the original land grants, or if the avenue is open for that?
Yes, you need to contact your local processor if you have one there. If not, you know, contact the Republic or Gene or
Nathan.
Robert or whoever. And
yes, Nathan, if I could give the website address for that.
Yes.
It's Dominion Service, S-E-R-V-I-C-E, with no S at the end, .org. And, yes, DominionService.org. We also have an email, which is Dominion Services with an S on the end, registry at yahoo.com.
All right, I think I wrote fast enough. We'll find out when I go try it.
That's right. We're actually past our 2 minutes. I didn't ding myself. I'm sorry.
I yield. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from, looks like Lauren, 812 area code. Go ahead, Lauren. Your time starts now.
Hi, Nathan. This is Lauren from Indiana. I really appreciate the depth detail you go into. And my question is, I've actually attended three of these land patents, train the trainers, although the first one wasn't called that. It was just an introduction. And I've been watching as best I can as the process becomes completed, waiting for the site to become active. So my question is, will your new information change the documents that will be used in the land patent sandwich process?
Well, I would suggest that they get away from the word county, period.
Right. I concur. That's why I'm wondering. In the classes that I did attend, I watched, you know, the documents slowly change as they put them on the screen, so I expected that by the time things were, you know, active, that there would be some kind of update in the templates. And it strains my memory to try to remember whether I saw county used in any of our templates. I'm just wondering if...
I don't know. Tom Chapman might know that, or even Tim Turner. Is he on the call now or no?
No, but if you don't mind, I'm actually completing those documents so they can be turned into a template.
Okay.
And the only reference so far to a county is when we have a document that we are having notarized, number
right.
one, or if we actually are trying to get them recorded into the county. There's one document that we definitely want to try to. And also a declaration that we've received it from our warranty deeds from a particular county. So, so far, those are the mentions of the county.
So, as it stands, you know, based on Nathan's, you know, practical matter, get this done. Will county still be used in the template for you know, purposes of just completing the process?
For a de facto notary, yes, we'll need to name the county because that's their system, and we
right.
are receiving a copy of our warranty deed from that county, de facto county. That's their system. So we do need to identify them, but not necessarily, you know, we're recording it into the Republic, not into a Republic county. And we are over our time on this question. I'm sorry.
So,
go ahead, Nathan.
So in short, it will not change the forms as they were.
It will not change the forms. You know, I need to look over those forms. I think, you see, if you put, even in anything that you record, you can always put a disclaimer on a filing in the county recorder's offices for recording purposes only. It doesn't grant jurisdiction or anything. And so you can still do that if you've written the deed properly. You know, we want them to know, too.
Right.
Okay. We're beyond our time, so I need to go on to
before
the next
we go
question.
To the, before we go to the next question, I just want to make a comment about some of the questions that have come into questions at the Republic this week.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to apologize in advance to say that we've just gone so long tonight, I'd like us to finish the queue, and we will address these questions next week on the call. The only one I want to answer is one that came in to say, why are the calls not being posted anymore?
They have been today.
Okay. And so I just wanted to also underscore that if you're impatient for the call and want to hear it fast, Chuckers has got just such a good turnaround time on his website at republicsg.info. So calls are there. And I've heard under good authority this week that there's a redoubling effort to get calls posted. So we should see that on a lot of different calls.
Yes, and as of today, all of the roundtable calls are current. And Lady Chris, who's helping me get these posted now, she sent me a message that she's going to post tonight's call tonight.
Awesome.
So that'll be awesome. Great.
I mean, it's the same with. And just let's do our other announcements about Monday and folks getting together with their leadership to find out what's going on and stuff like that. The Monday call?
Oh, well, the Monday call is for the executive branch. And the purpose of the Monday night call, executive branch comes together. They are updated by the national executive branch, also the House, the Senate, any cabinet members that have updates. And they are supposed to take that information and then pass it along to you, the people in the assemblies. So if you're not hearing from your governor or the executive branch in your state, send them a little note and say, why not?
All right. Thank you. Next caller.
Great. The next caller is Joseph, 540 area code. I believe that is Virginia. And Joseph, your time starts now.
Yes, thank you. I'm afraid I just have an annoying question, and that's to ask to repeat where we can find the PDF at what site.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's at Republic, or www.republicsg.info. And then if you click on the tab that says latest updates, you will find the PDF there of the timetable that Nathan has laid out.
Terrific.
Thank you. But you'll also find, for those of you who are researchers, that he has a wealth of other research on his site. So poke around on his site. He's got just a lot of stuff there, and hopefully he'll be able to have all of these PDFs of what you referenced tonight, Nathan.
Yes.
Each of the acts.
In fact, I would like to have them uploaded on the One Supreme Court website as well, if I can get a hold of Rick Rios anytime soon.
Okay,
great.
I think Brad offered to help you on that one, too.
Right.
Oh, okay, yes. All right.
Yeah, right. Excellent.
And I would also like to do sort of a little bit of a shameless plug for Chuckers. Chuckers spends has built this site on his own. He maintains it. He has put... I know there's at least 20 dictionaries in there, and when you open them up, there's several editions of each one. This is actually just a treasure trove for everyone in the Republic. And he does have a donate button on there. And so I would encourage anyone, even if it's just a little bit, if you can donate anything at all to Chuckers to help him maintain the site, I know it would be truly appreciated. All right, I'm going to go to our next caller, Robert. It's an 802 area code. I'm not sure who it is. Caller, your time starts now.
It just unmuted my phone, so I'm supposing
I'm assuming
I'm
that's
guy.
You.
Okay.
What's your name, sir?
My name is Senator David Gagne from Vermont.
Thanks, David.
How you
Hi.
Doing?
Good.
When Nathan was talking about that we needed to get rid of all the stuff that had county in it, that's wrong end of the day for me, I kind of panicked because I was thinking of all the documents, the DSRs, the jury covenants, and all the other things that we've been working for. Do we need to redo all those forms, or are we just going to kind of let them fade into the past?
Can I answer that question?
Sure.
Yeah, you're the one.
Okay. I would let them fade in the past, and I would continue moving forward and just get updated documents. The document that I probably Yeah, I would just, you know, if there's any documents that you can easily retrieve and cancel, I would do that. But, you know, I wouldn't sweat it. Let's put it that way.
We spent a great deal of time in the beginning doing our county constitutions, and now we've got to throw them all out. So,
well, you got to understand, though, that is your constitution. It's not their constitution.
I understand what Nathan was saying, and I'm not saying I don't want to do this. I absolutely want to move forward, and there will be times when we trip over our own work and say, well, that was a stupid thing to do. We don't do that anymore. This may be one of them. So, and I really am impressed with the amount of work that Nathan did, and I congratulate him on it. So with that, I leave the floor. Thank you.
You bet. Appreciate
you, David,
for all the hard work.
Thank you. Nathan, before we go to the last caller in our queue, I would like for you to give the new website address for the One Supreme Court.
Okay. Yeah, the website address for the One Supreme Court is osc.republicfortheunitedstates.org. You don't use a www. You just put in osc.republicfortheunitedstates.org. Excuse me. And that will get you to the website. We will update this website. Hopefully we will have it done within the week with all the statutes at large and with all the information that I've been researching, and we want to put it up there, and all of you are welcome to put it up on your website too. But we're going to become very proactive in the land patent process, land grants, and moving forward with working with our juries, our grand juries, and the judges, and setting up our district courts, as well as the ecclesiastical courts where appropriate.
I see the site is up. It's running, One Supreme Court.
Yes.
Pulled it up easily. And I didn't put a www. I just did exactly what you said, osc.republicfortheunitedstates.org. Comes up, so folks, have a look at it. See what Nathan got there.
Thank
you.
Our next
caller.
Yes, our final caller. Whoops, nope. I guess we have two now. The next caller is Drew Rayner from Mississippi. Go ahead, Drew. Your time starts now.
Well, mine's not going to take very long. One of my questions was already answered. That's about the Dominion Services. The next is that there is a program out now called Dragon that I've gotten reports on is very good for transcribing, and it's not, you do it by voice. So I would suggest people look into getting that. I understand you can get it for about $35, and I'm going to look it up shortly. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Drew. That's good information.
Yeah, I've heard that. I would like some feedback from somebody who's tried it. I've heard that it's supposed to be very good once it figures out your voice on your system.
I believe Michael Bishop, the governor of Florida, uses it, and he really likes it. He's a doctor, so I think he uses it for doing charts. So,
oh, okay. Well, thanks, Drew. I think that's that's actually very, very excellent. It'll help us get some white papers out for the Republic, actually. That's really
good.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we have more happening in the call here. So,
more happening here. Oops.
Orlando.
Oops.
Joseph.
Go ahead. Joseph, your time starts now.
Yes, sorry, one more annoying question. I'm not clear on tomorrow night's call and who is invited and what that number, and should I be able to attend the call, what the number and code is for the call.
Very good. That's very good. Thanks for bringing back up. Nathan.
Okay. The call is for judges, justices, attorney generals, and the judicial branch of the House. However, we are a transparent republic. I don't care who gets on that call because we're not secret. You might have to stay in the background if you get on and listen, but we really want to engage with the justices and the judges and the attorney general, so I don't care if you listened in.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to. Could I have a number and a code for it?
So, Nathan, you want me to let me pull up the call information. I wasn't ready for this, so let me go grab it.
I wasn't either, but you know what? This is education time.
That's okay.
You
guys can bear with me just a moment. Robert, if you can pull the next callers up, I
will
go find my email, and I'll get that call information out.
All right. Thanks, Joseph. Next caller, 617 from Maine.
This is Representative Vital da Silva Rosa from Massachusetts.
I'm sorry, you said it so fast, I didn't hear who you are.
I wasn't saying it fast, you were listening slow.
Yeah, you're from the East Coast, I get it.
It's Vital da Silva Rosa. I'm a representative from Massachusetts Free State, and I just wanted to thank Nathan Peachy and Kelby Smith and everybody else for all the great work they're doing and all the great stories. And I just wanted to give information on that software. It's called Dragon Naturally Speaking. And that's actually, I haven't used it, but I hear that it's real good. So it'll save a lot of time transcribing, but, you know, there's obviously going to be some mistakes. Also, one other tool that's out there that some people have used is Google has Google Voice. And I know they do that with voicemails and stuff like that. It transcribes it so that you can get a text message. I don't know if that can also be used for that kind of work that you guys are looking for. That's all I have. Yield the floor, and everyone have a good evening.
Thank you so much.
I do
have that number. And so tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern, the phone number is 712-432-0075, and the code is 644-101-pound. Let me repeat that. The phone number, 712-432-0075. The code is 644-101. And we'll ask that everyone please... on the call, please save the questions for the queue when they get to that for the judges, justices, attorney generals, and prosecutors.
Janine, what time is that? What time is that?
6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern.
Pacific.
Yes.
Very good.
And I believe you've already unmuted Justice Gorla.
Yes,
Robert,
no.
Justice
yes,
Gorla,
yes.
You have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you so much again for moderating and having this call for us. It's extremely educational. Clarification, the gentleman from the unintelligible voice was correct. This is Dragon Naturally Speaking. It is, I think, 11.2 or something like that version that I'm using. I highly recommend it. I use it to transcribe our justice calls on the fly, and that's why you have a white paper in your email as we speak. Another note, the first caller of the night was extremely educational also. I am responsible as the acting secretary of the court to try to get a lot of data up. As the Chief Justice has mentioned, he's going to be posting all of this on the website with the help of Justice Rios. I'm having a call with him this evening at 9:30 Pacific time. And I'm also asking that all those who are listening who have had any successes would please try to copy me at J Gorla, G-O-R-L-A. That's J as in John, G as in George, O-R-L-A, at gmail.com on all successes you've had. I'm asking you to put together a portfolio, a folder, with all the documents that you have had success with so that we can start building templates, posting them on the website for the One Supreme Court, and helping those who are in dire need, whether it's IRS, criminal cases, whatever it is, that we can assist. And that would be a big help toward getting the justice that we deserve in the Republic. And I yield the floor. Thank you so much. God bless America.
God bless
Justice
you.
Gorla, if we can get your Dragon Naturally Speaking to speak the name of our gentleman from Massachusetts, his name is Vital da Silva Rosa. I believe I got that right. I listened slow, but I got it. So
that's okay. I quit transcribing as soon as Justice Peachy stopped.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Great.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Thank you. Our last caller is Lauren Foley. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Just thank you. I'll be very brief. The only reason I'm coming back on is I've had Dragon Naturally Speaking for years, but anybody has Windows 8, you actually have a free product that works just as well as Dragon Naturally Speaking. So with that, I'll yield the floor.
Is that the same as the Windows Professional?
Yeah, well, any version of Windows 8 operating system. Just look up voice input or voice recognition, and you'll find the it's already installed.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Nathan, I thank you so much for your research. I look forward to this. If we can just reiterate it, we're going to have all of the actual acts available in PDF this week. Is that correct?
Nope, you're going to have them all tonight.
Oh, tonight. Okay, very good.
We're going to give them all an ice cream treat. I'm going to scan them in. I'm going to label them. I'm going to shoot them off to Janine yet tonight. Okay, so about an hour, she should be able to send it out to everybody on the list.
Excellent.
Well, if you guys will indulge me this evening, this has been a very long call, and this is my husband's birthday, and I'm going to take him to dinner, so you probably won't get your email with Nathan's information until tomorrow.
Okay. Well, it's a superhuman effort. I just appreciate very much all that you've done. Thank all of our guests and our callers for joining us this evening. There are, as I said, questions that are unanswered from last week. Some of them have to do with some totally different type of business, so grant us the indulgence. We'll try to attend to those on our call next week. All right. So, Bruce, I'm going to unmute you again, sir, if you would be so kind as to close us in a word of prayer.
Will do. Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for the time of fellowship. We thank you for the wisdom and understanding you're bringing to each one in Republic. Father God, help us to run the race together that's set before us, that we might do it with excellence as it would glorify you. We pray your special blessings upon Nathan for all the research and energies he's put into this, for each and every one on the call who is applying himself and herself diligently, Father, to bring forth that which you would ordain in this earth. We rest in your love and faithfulness. We praise you, give you the glory and the honor. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much. God bless you. Good night.
You bet.
Through the night with a light.